and so, with our numbers divided between them, we set forth upon the bosom of the anchorage. As we pulled over, there was some discussion on the chart. The Red Cross was, of course, far too large to be a guide, and the terms of the note on the back, as you will hear, admitted some ambiguity. They ran thus: Tall tree, spyglass shoulder, bearing a point to the north of north-northeast. Skeleton Island east-southeast, and by east, 10 feet. A tall tree was thus the principal mark. Now, right before us, the anchorage was bounded by a plateau from 200 to 300 feet high, adjoining on the north the sloping southern shoulder of the spyglass. The top of the plateau was dotted thickly with pine trees of varying height. Every here and there one of a different species rose 40 or 50 feet clear above its neighbors, and which of these was the particular tall tree of Captain Flint could only be decided on the spot by the readings of the compass. Yet, although that was the case, every man on board the boats had picked a favorite of his own before we were halfway over, Long John alone shrugging his shoulders and bidding them wait till they were there. We pulled easily, by Silver's directions, not to weary the hands prematurely, and, after quite a long passage, landed at the mouth of the second river, that which runs down a woody cleft of the spyglass. Thence, bending to our left, we began to ascend the slope toward the plateau. The party spread itself abroad in a fan shape, shouting and leaping to and fro. About the center and a good way behind the rest, Silver and I followed, I tethered by my rope, he ploughing with deep panting among the sliding gravel. From time to time, indeed, I had to lend him a hand, or he must have missed his footing and fallen backward down the hill. We had thus proceeded for about half a mile, and were approaching the brow of the plateau, when the man upon the farthest left began to cry aloud, as if in terror. Shout after shout came from him, and the others began to run in his direction. "He can't have found the treasure," said old Morgan, hurrying past us from the right, "for that's clean atop." Indeed, as we found when we also reached the spot, it was something very different. At the foot of a pretty big pine, and involved in a green creeper, which had even partly lifted some of the smaller bones, a human skeleton lay, with a few shreds of clothing on the ground. I believe a chill struck for a moment to every heart. "He was a seaman," said George Merry, who, bolder than the rest, had gone up close and was examining the rags of clothing. "Leastways, this is good sea cloth." "Aye," said Silver. "Like enough you wouldn't look to find a bishop here, I reckon. But what sort of a way is that for bones to lie? 'Tain't natural." Indeed, on second glance, it seemed impossible to fancy that the body was in a natural position. But for some disarray of the work, perhaps, of the birds that had fed upon him, or the slow-growing creeper that had gradually enveloped his remains, the man lay perfectly straight, his feet pointing in one direction, his hands raised above his head like a diver's, pointing directly in the opposites. "I've taken a notion into my own skull," observed Silver. "Here's the compass. There's the point of Skeleton Island sticking out like a tooth. Just take a bearing, will you, along the line of them bones." It was done. The body pointed straight in the direction of the island, and the compass read duly east-southeast and by east. "I thought so," cried the cook. "This here is a pointer. Right up there is our line for the Pole Star and the Jolly Dollars. But, by thunder, if it don't make me cold inside to think of Flint, this is one of his jokes and no mistake. Him and these six was alone here, he killed 'em, every man, and this one he hauled here and laid down by compass." "There ain't a thing left here," said Mary, feeling round among the bones. "Not a copper nor a tobacco box. It don't look natural to me." "No, it don't," agreed Morgan. "Not natural. If Flint was living, this would be a hot spot for you and me. Six they were, and six are we, and bones is what they are now." "Come, come," said Silver, "stow this talk. He's dead, and he don't walk. Now, fetch ahead for the doubloons." We started, but in spite of the hot sun and the staring daylight, the pirates no longer ran separate and shouting through the wood, but kept side by side and spoke with bated breath. The terror of the dead buccaneer had fallen on their spirits.